The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Today, Chelsea on mission to take out leaders in strange high-walled compound. It's the game that United need like a hole in the head. The pot asks, has there ever been a Sunday this super? And where can we see pictures? Meantime, desperate bottom of the table, fumbling and bumbling ahoy, it's another round of relegation battles. West Ham, Blackburn and West Brom Wolves. We preview the weekend action, diss the Champions League as rubbish. Hear from Sid Lowe and from international enemy of Leeds, David Conn. There's posts and tweets, and speaking of tweets, we salute the Canaries and their goldmine, Norwich, promoted to the Premier League. All that and other bits too in Football Weekly Extra. Right, on board today, Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hello, Sean Ingle.
Hello.
We've got to be quick, haven't we, Sean, because you've got a boxing. And so has Norwich-loving Paul McGuinness.
Hiya.
Yeah.
But we do boxing at different levels. Sean gets in the ring, I just stay on the bag.
That sounds so right on so many levels. Good. All right, then.
And what does your wife think of this arrangement?
She's perfectly happy about it, as long as I record it.
Does she know that's what you call her in podcast?
Anyway, now, almost as exciting as a potential McInnes-Ingle clash in the ring or on the bag. Oh dear. Is the big showdown Sunday at Old Trafford, Man United-Chelsea. Man United resting their entire first team pretty much ahead of this one just to make sure they're extra fresh for the game. Resting them in their Champions League semi-final. Quite unprecedented, this, really, no? To have a Champions League semi-final treated like a Carling Cup.
True, but their opponents were Schalke. So if you're going to do this, it was against a team that didn't really offer very much in the first leg. And apart from the odd flash in the second leg, didn't really offer much at Old Trafford last night either.
Is this game evidence of just how uninspired the Champions League has been this season?
Well, I think there's been some decent games. No one looking at the first Arsenal-Barcelona game would say, there hasn't been some decent games. And I think Schalke going away at the San Siro was fantastic. The issue probably is that you've got these three very rich clubs in Barcelona, Real Madrid and Manchester United, the three best teams in Europe. And you can't really see the situation where the big clubs are finishing in these top positions change.
Barca aren't that rich, actually.
They are. I should explain it better. You've got a situation where you've got clubs that pay huge wages and are able to bring in the best players, consistently year after year reaching the high levels. And I think last year was a blip when you had Inter and Bayern going through. And I think this year's was reasserted dominance of the English and the Spanish clubs.
Well, it's not as if Inter and Bayern are these kind of... they're not like Porto in 2004.
Yeah.
Yeah. Schalke
hammered the holders over two legs, so that's not a fluke. Whether that's a huge, very bad reflection on Inter or a good reflection on Schalke, I don't know. But because I don't see enough Italian football to know, I don't see any Italian football, really.
You can never see enough Italian football.
So I've heard. Hmm. But I thought Ferguson's team selection last night was very brave, because if it had blown up in his face, which it could have, he'd have been accused of treating the Champions League with contempt. But as has been demonstrated by the sort of facile nature of United's victory, deserved to be treated with contempt. A United second team was able to comfortably beat a German mid-division team in the semi-final of what's supposedly the best competition in the world after the FA Cup.
All right.
And who didn't enjoy the cheer that went around Old Trafford when Darren Gibson scored? I wonder how many of those people had been on the verge of or had actually posted vituperative remarks on Twitter just a week previous.
Darren's adventures in Twitter lasted, 90 minutes?
Something like that.
All right. And what exactly happened?
He signed up for Twitter. Lots of people went on Twitter saying, Darren, you're terrible. You're a disgrace to Manchester United. Go away. Obviously, with years and years of professional experience behind them to assess accurately the qualities he brings on the pitch.
Right.
And then he was like, sod that for a game of soldiers, I'll go.
Right, okay. Yeah, you're following, of course, Kevin Davies' lead earlier in the week.
I heard he's left.
Yeah.
But can I just say something about, as I was talking about this the other night with a friend, the idea that the Premiership this year has been poor, that people say the standard has dropped, which I don't entirely agree with, but people say it's particularly at the top. But then people say, well, where has the quality gone? If it's gone from the Premiership, where else is it? Because you look at the league, you look at the way that Schalke did turn over Inter and then got turned over themselves. Barcelona, apart. Where are the great teams in Europe right now if they're, you know, if they're not in the Premier League?
I don't know.
Have we just got to a point where there aren't as many great? We've gone through a golden generation.
Well, I mean, I've made this point, you know, repeatedly over the years. I think, you know, Euro 2000 was, you know, was perhaps the pinnacle, certainly in my lifetime, of competition. Fantastic players, all quite young, pushing through. And I do think we always think with football and sport in general that you always get better. And I think that perhaps isn't always the case. And I think perhaps quality-wise, we're not as strong now. And again, it's a very difficult argument to make, probably, because you can throw in Barcelona and say, well, they're the greatest club team ever. But I do wonder when you look at perhaps the World Cup last year and think, well, you know, there wasn't really perhaps that same level of players going all the way down.
You might be right. This might be a momentary trough in the world quality of football. It might just be that we see too much football and everything's getting a bit devalued, whereas in the old days you'd only see certain things and they would therefore be that much more special. Sunday, though, that's going to be special, isn't it, Barry?
It's a super Sunday.
Certainly is. What do you think, though, eh? Man United, they haven't lost at home in 29 matches now. They've only dropped 2 points at home all season.
Well, if I'm not very much mistaken, and it's quite possible I am, I think Chelsea were the last team to beat them in Old Trafford.
Yeah, last season, on their way to the title.
It's a huge ask for Chelsea, isn't it?
Is it, Paul?
I think it's, but it's, you know, United's form is imperious. Chelsea, they have been on a great run. I'm not sure they've necessarily done it whilst being absolutely convincing. And still the big question is, who plays up front? And, you know, is he going to pick Torres? Because actually, I think that forward three, when it's Malouda and Kalou in that system,
Drogba in the middle,
I'm not sure is world class. However, Drogba playing that centre role is making the difference for Chelsea at the moment.
And when he doesn't start, I mean, against Spurs last weekend, he clearly had no interest in the game after that.
Well, exactly. My feeling is they need to sell Drogba in the summer, but until then, he needs to be the focal point of everything they do if they're going to
have a chance. Should David Luiz start?
Certainly, yeah.
Okay.
It's a strange one. I mean, I was chatting to see a Chelsea season ticket holder quite recently who said that he hadn't seen them play well throughout the game since October. You know, they were very good in the second half against United when they won in the league. But I think people have been a little bit hard on United. I mean, I think people forget that the great 1999 treble winning side, you know, only reached 79 points. If United win their last three games, they'll win more than that. Away from home, that great 1999 side, against teams ranked 2 to 8, they didn't win a game. They drew 6 and lost 1. People have talked a lot about United's away form this season, but actually it's pretty similar to that great treble-winning side. And I think we may look back, if United do end up winning the league and do end up winning the Champions League / European Cup, as this being a pretty decent United side. And I think perhaps we've undervalued their achievements this year.
All right, well, after this game...
Undervalued their achievements. I'm not sure we've undervalued the team. I mean, I think you compare it to that 2007-2008 United side, and it isn't really a patch on that.
The following fixtures after this game, United have Blackburn away, then they're at home to Blackpool to finish off Chelsea, arguably even easier, have Newcastle, then they're at Everton on the final day, an Everton team who, by their admission, have pretty much got their flip-flops on already, awaiting the summer hole. So it does look like coming down to this game. It doesn't sound like...
You have to be kind of careful about saying that, because I think Celtic thought they had the Scottish League wrapped up because they got the draw they needed with Rangers in the last of the 7 Old Firm derbies this season that left them in the box seat, and then they go and lose against Inverness Caledonian Thistle last night, 3-2, putting Rangers back in the box seat. So... Yeah, but it's a very difficult game to call on Sunday.
Is it?
I think so.
I think everyone seems to be quite confident about United's chances.
Well, I think United won't lose. I think they should win. I think Chelsea's away record isn't that great. They've won 7, drawn 5, lost 5. I don't personally agree with Paul. I don't think they've played that well, even though they've won the last 5 games. And I'd be very surprised if United didn't at least get a point. And I'm going to put some money on them to win.
Yeah, I think a Chelsea win is unlikely. But I'm not sure I would confidently call a United win either. So,
Barry?
I don't care who wins.
Do you not?
I really couldn't care less.
What do you care about?
This is now going to be construed as me hating football. I just don't care.
It leaves you cold.
Yeah, completely leaves me cold.
The fact that Chelsea were 15 points behind, looks like Man United were running away from the title, with the title rather, and now we've come to the situation where not only are they 3 points behind, but the next game is Man United-Chelsea. That doesn't inspire
me. No, I derive more pleasure from seeing, you know, who gets out of the relegation battle, who goes down. I derive more pleasure out of seeing, you know, Norwich get back to back promotions. Oh, here he's off. And yeah, I just
one whole, big club or another big club.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, we'll talk more about the little ones later on. Right now, though, we'll take a quick musical pause. After which, we're back with Sid Lowe. Barry.
Yes.
What are you interested in? You know, I said there was going to be Sid Lowe, but he's off doing something else right now.
And while we were waiting for him, Sean said that I said I didn't care about the game between Chelsea and Manchester United, which is not what I said. I said I didn't care who wins.
Right.
But I will be watching.
You'll enjoy
game.
It as a sporting spectacle.
Well, hopefully, if it's a good spectacle.
Yeah. All right. What do you care about this weekend?
This weekend, I'm quite looking forward to Tottenham, Blackpool and West Ham, Blackburn.
Right, it's the relegation battle, the race not to drop out of the Premier League, quite literally. Wigan, who are just below Blackpool, in third last place, are away. Aston Villa are probably safe.
That's quite interesting, that game.
Do you think it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Villa, I fancy Wigan's chances of Villa.
Exactly, that's why I think it might be interesting, because I think having links in the area and also colleagues who support Wigan, I think the feeling is that at long, long last, this Martinez way of playing has clicked with the players.
Really?
Yeah, and they're being a little bit more robust defensively.
They keep giving away leads, though.
They keep giving away leads, but they take the point from the game rather than getting beat.
Right.
And you know they have had some good wins as well in that mix.
Most of them haven't been away from home. They've only won one of the last eight away.
But they've taken points, though.
They've drawn a lot of games. My worry with Wigan would be they've got Villa, they've got West Ham at home and Stoke away, and they probably need to win at least one or probably two of those games.
Mm. It's currently only goal difference keeping them in the bottom three. Blackpool just above them, who Barry will be excited to be reminded, are facing Spurs. That is a big game, isn't it? Because, of course, Spurs have their own fish to fry.
They do, yes. Mm. Blackpool have only won two games this season. This year. Calendar year.
Right.
So the chances of winning away from home at Spurs would appear to be slim, but Spurs are quite flaky.
Do you know who the last team Blackpool beat is?
No.
Have a guess.
Spurs.
Oh.
Yeah. They haven't won since beating Spurs at home in February, a run of eight games that has seen them slide fourth bottom.
And Spurs' record against the low-ranking teams in the Premier League is poor, to say the least.
Well, they haven't exactly set the world on fire themselves, Spurs, of late. I think they haven't won in five now.
The trouble with Spurs, I think, this season, they've drawn too many games. But they aren't beaten at home in the last 15. So I think you would expect them to, it'd be a big shock, I think, if they were to lose. Although they have lost against some of these lower-ranked sides earlier this season.
Right. Spurs, of course, were hoping to get into the top four. City, though, Man City could guarantee their own Champions League qualification if they win away to Everton this weekend. And Spurs do lose that match with Blackpool. Now, also coming up in the bottom of the table, Millay. You got second from bottom, Wolves, who are hosting West Bromwich Albion in the Black Country Derby. West Brom, they've only had one defeat in nine, and that was to form team in Premier League Chelsea. And they got a chance here to effectively. Would this put Wolves down? Would this put their rivals down?
I mean, Wolves and West Ham are in a similar-ish situation in the sense that you look at their games they've got left to play and you think they could win them all.
Really?
I mean, Wolves have got West Brom at home, then away at Sunderland, then they're at home against Blackburn. So, similarly, West Ham, which we'll go on to, but they've got they've got Blackburn at home, Wigan away, Sunderland at home. So, which makes this whole next three matches really interesting. But what worries me about Wolves is that having played well for most of the season, they haven't got the results. Now they're starting to play badly, and they they look bedraggled. They're missing Kevin Doyle, I think. They've missed him hugely.
And Matt Jarvis has gone a bit off the boil as well. And I just wonder if the nerves are going to get to them. The pressure is really a home match like that. And Roy Hodgson's got West Brom flying. They're safe. It's a derby as well, so there is an incentive to win.
They could go top half with a win here.
Well, if Blackburn beat West Ham, that would effectively relegate West Ham. And Wolves could have...
Would it? Because they're 3 points off safety at the moment. Sean's saying that they could win their last three games. Problem is they're just not winning games at the moment. They've had no wins in their last seven, the Hammers.
It's astonishing. I think it's quite interesting today. If you read the papers and read our paper, that West Ham have already drawn up a shortlist to replace Grant. I mean, something they should have done probably 6 months ago, because there's no way that team should go down. They are too good if you look at their squad. But it indicates that all is not well. The Hammers, they're already thinking ahead for next season. I just think, look at the names they want on that list. People like Lambert, people like Holloway, people like Neil Warnock. I don't think they would probably go to a side playing in the Championship.
I just wonder about... I know there is a general consensus that Avon Grant is ineffective and useless. But I just think they nearly got relegated last year with the same squad of players. Some of the players he brought in, and particularly in the January window, have actually been some of their most effective performers. Mm. And they have, on occasions, reached patches of half-decent form. I wonder almost whether there's just been a little bit too much talk for them about they had the best run-in, they had the best squad, that they should be relaxed and calm about it. And that has kind of been accompanied by a tragic dip in form. Mm. I mean, I think I agree with you on the managers, though. And I'm not even sure that half of them, I'm not sure. I mean, Warnock doesn't have an amazing track record in the... Well, one season, not an amazing track record. Holloway, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, he's been a great addition to the Prem in terms of personality, but how much amazing management has he done? Because effectively, he'll be judged on whether they're stayed up or not.
What about this Paul Lambert bloke? Who's he?
Well, Paul Lambert is the new Alex Ferguson.
Right. We'll come on to Paul Lambert, the new Alex Ferguson, very, very shortly. Blackburn have only won one in their last... Well, that was their last weekend. They won their first in 11, and they're rotten on the road. So I'm inclined to agree with Barry. If West Ham don't win this game, when are they going to win? They're down. They're out of here. Game over. Now, among the teams relegated sides may pass on their way down are Norwich.
Hooray.
Hooray. Well done, Paul.
Thanks very much, Ida. I played a key role.
Yeah. Good. Let's hear more about Norwich. Now, lots of people posting in on the exciting news about Norwich. Monday it happened, didn't it?
It did. I was there at Fratton Park.
Did you go along?
I did a pitch invasion, my first ever pitch invasion.
Really? Was there any trouble after?
Pitch invasion ever. Do not go on the pitch, do not go on the pitch. Police kind of screened off the end. And then some kids got through and stuff, and they were larking with the players, and then they just gave up.
Were you the oldest pitch invader?
Yeah, was the oldest pitch invader and the most sedate. Right. But I did enjoy myself. It was fun.
Did Stephen Fry invade the pitch?
I don't know whether Stephen Fry... I think he was watching on television.
Right.
It was slightly anticlimactic, I found, Monday, to be honest. Partly because all the celebrations were going on at the other end of the stand, but also because of that massive bottle by Cardiff, which I think caught everybody by surprise. I really thought they were definitely going to win both their games. We were definitely going to have to win both ours. Mm. And then to go and see that 3-0 down in 20 minutes, then subsequently to read about them all going out on the pop on Saturday night.
Right.
It's just absolutely criminal.
All right, remind me to come on to Cardiff again in a second.
Okay.
Well, first of all, you mentioned Stephen Fry. And two, you know, the say, uninformed observer, you might think this Norwich, they must be the most genteel bourgeois club in the history of football with Dame Delia Smith there churning out the match day treats and Stephen Fry tweeting all sorts of... Subwaldi and Tosh about them and that kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Just a quick social political fact.
Yeah.
That two of the Norwich city councils take in some of the most poorest areas in the country. And
really?
We have a significant kind of percentage of the population in Norfolk who are living on minimum wage and on benefits. That said, you've also got this very, very middle class, upper middle class almost streak, which is informed by posh people moving up from London and buying a second home. So I think the club is genteel, but I think that has always been our selling point. We've attracted players in the past, and we did this when we went up to the Premiership in 2005 by saying, come and live in Norwich, it's a beautiful place. And the wonderful thing about Paul Lambert is he hates all that. He has absolutely no interest in selling. He doesn't want players who want to come and live in Norwich. He wants players who are hungry to win titles. Mm. And not just as he said, he doesn't want the poster, he wants the trophy. That's one of the main reasons why we've had such a successful side these last 2 years, is that hunger and that desire to win. And that's been a real pleasant change.
All right. Now, a lot of people are saying he should be manager of the year. This is his second straight promotion after bringing Norwich up from League One, as you know. He's never managed or played in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Won a Champions League medal at Borussia Dortmund. Tell us more about why it's been so amazing.
Why has it been so amazing? Well, it has been like an actual Michael Hardcastle book. Or indeed, Roy of the Rovers.
Goal. He must have read Goal. In the net.
Didn't read
in the
goal.
Net. This the was most... like...
He wrote in the 70s, he wrote loads of books for 8 year olds about football, where 8 year olds suddenly become really good at football. Let's say Roy of the Rovers, right?
Right.
Except the Roy is on the bench rather than in the pitch.
Yep.
Because we have been on an unprecedented run for this club. We've gone 2 years now without losing two games on the bounce. We have been top scorers in the division both times. We have scored, I'd say, 20-plus goals in added time in the two seasons. And we've also had these amazing, amazing results. Like we were singing on Monday night, we beat the Scum 9-2 because our aggregate scoreline against Ipswich this season, who have spent loads of money on loads of players and had Jimmy Bullard, it's 9-2. So he has created this narrative which has been full of excitement, and everybody's got behind it and really wanted to. The supporters have really locked behind Lambert.
What's going to happen to that narrative in the Premier League?
Well, there is a feeling among some supporters that actually this is the moment and we should enjoy this, because I think he'll keep us up. If he stays, I think we'll stay up. I think he will find a way. But a club of our size is never going to get in the Champions League. And so what do we have to look forward to?
Don't know.
The odd scalp, you know. But we beat Man United 2-0 when we were last in the Prem and we went down.
Yeah.
What's the satisfaction
that's
in that?
Football these days, I mean, again, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, there was a chance that you probably didn't win the league because Liverpool won it, but you had a chance to finish second, third. Remember Norwich doing that in the early 90s and beating Bayern
Munich.
I remember
seeing Norwich at the San Siro in the early 90s. Happy days, eh? Yeah. A couple of posts here. Dadrich says, well done, Norwich City. A very likeable club with a loyal fan base. Quite a scarf dilemma for all those clever Manchester United supporters when they visit Old Trafford, though. That is an issue, isn't it? Still. The beloved aunt says, next season is going to be very exciting. In addition to Ipswich, I will have 19 new teams to support. Now, I did ask you, was there anything else you wanted to say about...
Well, I just think a lot of people are going to be asking about Paul Lambert, and I didn't really say why he's good. I would say three things. One is this drive, this commitment to winning.
Yeah.
Two is his ability to find players who have the right technical abilities to fit in a particular role in a team. I think almost every player he's bought has done a job.
Right.
Number three, effective substitutions. He would change a game, change formation, and change, you know, three players in a Mourinho-esque fashion from half-time onwards, and that has been a remarkable achievement.
And four, he's from Glasgow, which is frankly scary for players and very, very effective.
Indeed.
Do you think the fact that he did his coaching badges in Germany is a plus for him or sets him apart from other managers who didn't?
I think he has... One of the funniest things about Lambert is he hates the press and he gives the dullest interviews ever and he always repeats the same lines, like the lads, it's great to have lads who will run through walls for you. Another line of his, he says, is that people don't understand until they've worked with the Germans how focused and determined and professional they are. Obviously, it's a stereotype that we're aware of, but when he says you get in there, it's just a completely different mentality.
It wouldn't be a stereotype if it wasn't true in the first place, Paul. That's why I always say.
He clearly has never met Raphael Honigstein.
Yeah, but right on.
He fled over here.
He did, didn't he? Couldn't hack it in the efficient world of German
homeland
thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I did ask you to remind me about Cardiff.
How about Cardiff?
All right, then. How about Cardiff City's Kevin McNaughton? It says here, inadvertently barging assistant referee Sean Massey to the turf during Cardiff's defeat by Middlesbrough on Monday. Now, I've only seen one angle of this. Have you seen this, Paul?
I purposefully didn't watch it.
Oh, okay. Sean, you've seen it. It looks to me, to my very untutored eye, like said Kevin McNaughton, races past the touchline, sees Sean Massey, lowers a shoulder, changes direction and barges straight into her.
I certainly think he could have done more to avoid her, or at least lessen the impact. Or, you know, being a gentleman, having knocked a lady down, picked her up and said, I'm really sorry.
He took her out like Navy SEAL 6, whatever they're called.
I think you're talking cobblers.
Do you think so, Barry? Yeah. I want to see another angle, because I don't want to believe that this gentleman barged her over and then walked off without so much as a glance behind.
Well, he was contesting the ball and he got knocked off the field and the ball was still in play.
Yeah.
So he was attempting to turn to get back on the pitch, in my opinion anyway, and clattered into her. She shouldn't have been in the way.
Fair enough. Well, I if that's the case, then I apologise for my suspicious
I do
nature.
Think he probably could have like given her a hand up. And the same if it was a bloke, he could have given him a hand up. But the ball was still in play when he was sort of going back on the pitch and then it went out for a goal kick.
Can we just talk quickly about the other Cardiff fullback, J. Lloyd Samuel, who
was one
of the ones who was out on the Saturday night and was left on his arse for two of the goals. I mean, that is, you know, another
Cardiff players out on the lash on Saturday night.
And I think, you know, you look at what the money that Cardiff has spent this year, and you know, I'm sure Jay Lloyd himself hasn't come cheap on loan from Bolton, that I think Dave Jones has got to go. But here's the question. What's everybody think is going to happen to QPR?
Well, that is a question. Matt Cameron asked that question. What do you all think should happen to QPR? Fate decided tomorrow. But
I think they should be docked 15 points, which would leave them just below Reading, therefore enabling me to win a bet with a friend of mine that Reading will finish above QPR in the Championship.
Good, OK. Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't know if it's worth us speculating because of the decisions of it.
Well, I've heard that they're likely to get quite a hefty points deduction. I've heard 9 points, 10 and 12. So.
You've heard 15. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. This is the FA panel after all. This is a Football League panel after all, who will probably dock them a few points, which could mean they finish second, but I'd be surprised if they were any more than that.
All right. In the meantime, they play Leeds. Next up, Leeds, of course, have bigger fish to fry right now in the shape of journalistic nemesis David Conn, who will be joining us after this. Now, David Conn, following the money's David Conn. Big news for Leeds in the Championship. They've got sold. Presumably, they scoured the world for the right investors who are willing to seize the opportunity to buy this team from a one club town, you know, plenty of big prospects, low wage bill, etc. All good news. Who did they get?
Obviously, these were investors who've owned Leeds certainly since 2007. Unnamed investors. We were never told, and Leeds fans were never told who they actually were. But and we know that the Premier League said that would be a problem if Leeds got promoted, that they would want to know a lot more detail about who the owners were. And very quickly after Richard Scudamore, the Premier League chief executive, made that statement, those unnamed, unknown investors, as you say, decided to sell. They thought that now was the right time to sell the club. And the person who bought the club, that they found to buy the club, was actually Ken Bates, who's been the chairman at Leeds United, with no ownership connection to those unnamed investors before.
So are you suggesting, or is there a suggestion out there, that all the time Ken or somebody called, for example, Ben Cates has actually been in control of Leeds?
Well, I don't think that, you know, we're entitled to think that at all, because Ken has said all the way through, and he said it on oath in the High Court, for example, when he was in a libel action, that he didn't know who the owners of Leeds United were, and he's always said that it wasn't him. And that's what the chief executive, Sean Harvey, said to the Parliamentary Select Committee. So, you know, these were unnamed investors with no connection to Ken Bates, except that they entrusted Ken Bates to be the chairman of the club all the way through. And they've decided to sell. They've been at Leeds United. They bought the club out of administration in 2007. They've seen Leeds United up from League One into the Championship. They've dug in all this time. You would think that they might be able to get promoted perhaps next season. Even this season, if something happens with QPR, Leeds could be in the playoffs. But they've decided actually now is the time to sell.
Well, listen, it's good then that we know now finally who the owner of Leeds is, and it's Ken Bates. Or is it? Can you explain, as if you were addressing a room full of people with only the dimmest grasp of what you're talking about, what would you say to us, them?
I would say that Leeds United made a statement when they announced this on Tuesday that this now ends the speculation over Leeds United and what they called scaremongering by the Parliamentary Select Committee. But in fact, obviously, there is still speculation, which is who were those owners? Why did they decide to sell now? Because in Leeds' statement, they said it's related to Richard Scudamore saying that if Leeds were promoted, he would ask for more detail. But why wouldn't they have been? If they'd won promotion, which earns them £40 million in television money alone, just in the first season, why wouldn't they have been happy in return for that to give Richard Scudamore a bit more detail? And then when they did decide to sell, did they, as you say, scour the world for a buyer? I mean, Leeds is one of the clubs that is a very attractive club to buy. I mean, you've got to, probably, if you had big ambitions for them, you'd need to think about doing something with Elland Road in terms of, you know, redeveloping it. But basically, as you say, it is a great name. And so why sell now when you could be getting close to promotion? And did they try to find an investor who could put some money in? Because Ken Bates has said that he's never put any money into Leeds and that he doesn't have money to put into Leeds because his wealth is tied up in assets. And how much did he pay? Now the Football League and FA rules don't require those things to be disclosed. So it's quite true to say what Leeds said in their statement was, we are giving the transparency sought. In other words, the football authorities only ask for you to say who the buyer is. And they've gone from saying, we do not have to tell you who the owner is because nobody owns more than 10%, which is your rule, to saying, OK, Ken Bates has now bought it and he is the majority owner. And that is the transparency sought. And all those other questions, it's true to say that they're not required by the football authorities.
David, Sean Ingle here. You've been trying to shine a light on this situation, which is murkier than most swamps I've ever seen. But you've been targeted by Ken, haven't you, in the last couple of days?
Not just in the last couple of days, Sean. He started... Ken Bates uses the match day programme, which people... I mean, don't actually know how much it costs at Leeds, but obviously which dads buy for their sons to get team news and club news and all the rest of it. But Bates has, I think it's a double-page chairman's notes, and he does tend to sort of write about things which don't seem to have that much to do with the football and have a go at people, basically. And I and The Guardian have been featuring those for a while now. And this week, he came out with this... Not in the programme, we're waiting to see what he does, you know, whether we feature in the programme. But on Yorkshire Radio, which I think Leeds United own or Ken Bates owns himself, this thing about me being an international enemy of Leeds United, I mean, when they made the announcement that Ken Bates had bought it, I said it raises more questions than it answers. And the next morning, that's when we got I'm an international enemy of Leeds United. And I actually find that quite a weird phrase, which I'd like to know what you guys think of it. But just to say, I mean, from Leeds fans, I'm not trying to blow our own trumpet, I'm just saying we have had so much support from Leeds fans, not just now, but over the years of writing about Leeds, saying these are really important issues. Of course we support the team, of course we support the club, but it's not true to say that this is some sort of weird obsession about who owns the club. It's absolutely central. We want to understand it. We want our club to be... want to know who owns it, we want to know that it's wholesome, we want to understand why it's owned via offshore tax havens. Keep going. And we've had that again this week.
Well, hopefully, David, there's going to be a bit more clarity on the way. In the meantime, good luck with all your plotting and frequent flying, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Absolutely. Hopefully, a bit more frequent flying and a bit more international in my life would be great.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. Thanks, David. David Conn in a volcano. Some posts. Matthew Scholes. Big day for Luton today, Sean. Fingers crossed. Luton-Wimbledon playoff final will be quite something. What's all this about?
Well, Luton are playing Wrexham tonight in the playoffs. And also we should flag up AFC Wimbledon, who have won, I think, the last five games in the conference, are playing Fleetwood. And whoever goes up, I think, probably have a good run in League Two, because I think all four sides have done pretty well this season.
All right. Pseudonym says, can I get a shout out for Darlington in the FA Trophy final against Mansfield at Wembley on Saturday? After what we've been through in the last few years, we've earned a day out in the limelight. IMark has an update on the title race in the Dutch Eredivisie. FC 20 and Ajax are going to be playing off for the title in the Amsterdam Arena on May the 15th. They're also facing off in the final of the Dutch Cup in Rotterdam. Very interesting. Nice one, Imart. Thanks for that. Now, in a second, we're going to be climaxing the show with Sid Lowe in España. But before that, I just wanted to mention, because there's so much interest on the post for this, a very big weekend in Italy. You've got Roma. Yes, Roma. It's sixth against first. Milan can seal the title this weekend, but they have to go to Roma. They're taking 10,000 fans with them. Zlatan Ibrahimovic will be there as well. And maybe Berlusconi will be too. Did you see his comments or not before this game? He said, I hope we win and get the title because that'll help me in the elections.
Oh, really?
Very interesting. Yeah. He also said, I've won way more than that Santiago Bernabeu bloke. And they named a stadium after him. Did everybody
named
get that?
A stadium hit? After. Can they do that? Is there, are there naming rights on the San Siro?
Giuseppe Meazza.
Yeah, but you know, what did he ever win?
They could just call it the San Silvio.
They could do. There you are. You only have to buy a couple of extra letters for that. Bingo. Nice work. It's not the only big game this weekend, because you've also got the big playoff for the... Because the race for fourth is the hot one in Italy. And fourth place Lazio are at fifth place Udinese, one of the really sizzling teams at times this season. They're huge games, those, are Roma Milan Saturday night.
Do you think Alexis Sanchez will come to the UK?
They're hoping that in Milan that he's going to go to Inter. Yeah. As part of an amazing new-look Nerazzurri, which, in Massimo Moratti's dreams, also features Cesc Fabregas and some baldy, bearded bloke called Pep Guardiola on the bench.
Ooh.
Might ask Sid about that in a second or two. There you go. Also this weekend, Genoa-Sampdoria, the Genoa derby. Sampdoria just 1 point off the drop. You know what? Important though all that is, I think we ought to dial up Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Sid, it's over.
It is, isn't
it's
it?
It's over.
Huge sigh of relief.
Right. Barcelona in the finals, Sid. Are there other lasting consequences, do you think? Are there?
Yeah, I think there's loads of lasting consequences. Hopefully, some of them will die down, but this has been so so aggressive. It's been so unpleasant at times. People should be ashamed of themselves if it wasn't for the fact that they're utterly shameless, some of them. I think there will be lasting consequences. And, of course, one of the ones that people are concerned about is what effect this may have now on the Spanish national team. Vicente del Bosque has talked about that. One or two others have talked about that. And where do we go next? Not least because it's only 100 days till these teams face each other again.
Right. And indeed, what other kind of Spanish match is going to seem of any consequence after these four rip-roaring games? It was a better game, this one, but once again, there were some big questions over the refereeing, not least about that goal, that Real Madrid goal, which was called back because Cristiano Ronaldo, after being fouled by a Barcelona player, possibly touched the back of Mascherano's leg, fouling him. What was your take on this?
Well, the worst thing that can happen to someone who's paranoid is for the people to keep giving them evidence of reasons why they might have to be paranoid. I can understand why Real Madrid fans would be absolutely furious about the goal. And I'm still a little confused about this, because I've asked a number of referees and there's a certain degree of contradiction going on. Now, there's a couple of things. Given that the referee gave the free kick Barcelona's way, all right, he must assume that there was no foul on Cristiano Ronaldo. In other words, Ronaldo dives in to try and win a free kick. Presumably he's assuming that Ronaldo has dived, or Ronaldo has just fallen fortuitously and there's no foul. And then he fouls Javier Mascherano. Because he's given the free kick, Barcelona's way, that must be what he's given. There's no two ways about it.
There's no way that even if Ronaldo is fouled and he's played the advantage, but then Ronaldo bumps into...
Right. But if that was the case, if Ronaldo was fouled and he played the advantage, James, then he would have given the free kick to Real Madrid, wouldn't he? He would have bought it back and given it to Real Madrid.
Right.
He gave the free kick to Barcelona. So he must have judged that there was no foul by Gerard Piqué. The other thing that's worth saying, I suppose, at this stage is that the whistle does go before Higuain shoots. You see the way that Higuain shoots and the fact that he turns immediately to the referee. Now, that doesn't justify anything just because the whistle goes earlier, but it does tell you, I think, something about the process that the referee's going through. And because the free kick goes to Barcelona, he must think that Ronaldo wasn't fouled. Now, I've been talking to referees about this in terms of what it would mean if Ronaldo was fouled and then fouls Javier Mascherano, because there's no doubt that he lands on Mascherano's heel and fouls him. Now, there's a bit of a contradiction here, because if the referee allows the play to go on, the second he fouls Mascherano, Cristiano Ronaldo, the play has to be stopped. If he thinks that Ronaldo has been fouled, then it's stopped and brought back and it's a Real Madrid free kick. But the foul on Mascherano, there's a question mark on this, because the foul is accidental. Now, there's nothing in the rules that says anything about the importance of intentional, you know, whether or not something is intentional, except on handball. So a foul is a foul, whether it's intentional or not. In other words, you trip someone up, you trip them up, whether you mean to or not. Mm. But I've had a couple of referees say, but in a situation like that, the player is effectively not in charge of his own body, and therefore a foul can't be given against him. So it's very messy. Lots of referees are saying different things. And I must say, not being a qualified ref myself, I'm a little bit unsure as to how to judge it. But put it this way, if I was a Real Madrid fan, I would have been furious with that.
I remember Zidane not being in control of his own body. He didn't get a foul for that, Barry.
I think there's quite a few players who would claim are not in control of their own bodies, right, or indeed their minds.
Sid, what's Estella doing in the background there? It sounds like she's not in control of her own body. Is she humping a piece of furniture?
No, she's got herself a... I don't know what it is, a toy caterpillar that squeaks when she...
Oh. Duh. A couple of posts on this. Mighty Tractor says, did Jose have a point about refs being conned by Barca's antics? I believe he did, but that his own antics overshadowed it. Doug the Head has a series of questions. Any idea where Jose was during the game? Any ideas what Jimmy Jump tried to give Ronaldo? Particularly interested in that one. Any ideas who Madrid will try to sign this summer to catch up with Barcelona?
There's a lot of questions there, James. Where would you like me to start?
All right. Jose was in a hotel, correct?
Jose was in a hotel, yeah. Hence Jeff Stelling stealing my joke, the bastard.
What was that?
So I'm not happy about
that. Steal it back. What was the joke?
I pointed out that afternoon that seeing as Jose Mourinho was watching the game in his hotel room, he was probably watching it accompanied by a very, very small bottle of booze and a Toblerone.
Right.
And Jeff Stelling decided to tell that joke on Sky.
Well, what was the joke he told then?
He said something about Mourinho will be tucking into his Toblerone right about now or something
right.
like that.
I can see why two broadcasting giants would fight over a bit of comic gold like
that.
Oh, I'm
not particularly claiming it to be a particularly great joke.
But nice that... did you tweet that?
Did I? Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You put it out there. It's public domain. Any idea what Jimmy Jump tried to give to Ronaldo?
I'm not sure, but what Jimmy Jump normally does, because I didn't see the that particular bit of footage that clearly, but what he normally does is run on with the traditional Catalan hat, which is like a red hat that almost looks like a Smurf's hat, and try and put it on the heads. So I think he was probably trying to put that hat on Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, I find Jimmy Jump to be a massively tiresome bore because I quite like people who run on the pitch when they do funny things, but Jimmy Jump just runs on and runs around a bit. Although, I tell you what, he did show a good turn of speed.
He did, didn't he? On a particularly moist pitch as well. So,
yeah. I think he prepared for that, though. I think he was wearing the right footwear.
All right, good. Any ideas who Madrid will try and sign this summer to catch up with Barcelona?
Well, they've already got two, we think. They've bought Callejon back from Espanyol, the man who's got the same haircut as Jedward. And I don't really understand the point. I really don't. €5 million, he's a rounded youth teamer who they're bringing back to the club. They've tried that before with Negredo and Soldado and it didn't work. I can't see how Callejon, in truth, can play a particularly big role in a Real Madrid side. I mean, he's a squad player, yes, and useful, definitely, but not a huge role. The other one they're talking about, Sahin, or however you say his name, who's playing in Germany, Turkish. I honestly don't know enough about him to know how much of an impact he will have, but I don't think that will be the end of the spending. I think there will be more.
Right, and what about on the bench? I see the club are making noises about Jose getting another year, but a lot of people wondering whether Jose has damaged his chances with not only Real Madrid, but possibly prospective employers as well. But certainly in Madrid, this is a club that whose economic model is largely based on being worldwidely popular and selling shirts and stuff, and having a manager who basically turns them into a bunch of whinging victims. Is that good for business?
Well, it's very hard to give you a proper answer to that because the context is rather different now. And it's rather different to the way that it has been in the past. Florentino Perez, the president, has in the past talked about it not being enough to win. You have to win with style. I think his phrase was, you have to fascinate people. And he actually talked with a straight face about the evangelization of the world and making Real Madrid almost everybody's religion. He's been put into a difficult position, Florentino Perez, because by his own making almost entirely. He went 3 years without winning anything during his last mandate. He came back as the saviour of Real Madrid, saying we're going to have to do in 1 year what we would normally do in three, and they didn't win anything. Then he brings in Jose Mourinho. Why? Because he believes that Mourinho, better than anyone else, can guarantee success, and because Mourinho had just won the European Cup by knocking out Barcelona en route. So that involves bringing in Mourinho. It involves a complete turnaround in the politics of the club. It involves completely changing the model, changing the nature of the way that a manager interacts with other people at the club. It basically involves giving Mourinho absolute authority, including the almost entire removal from day-to-day tasks of Jorge Valdano, the club's director general. So Real Madrid have essentially, I mean, if you want to look at it in negative terms, have essentially signed a Faustian pact with Mourinho. They've got him in, and they now have to stick with him. Because if he was to walk away and be seen as a failure, then Real Madrid's project would be under enormous pressure, and the president would be under enormous pressure. So there's a massive contextual difference between this Real Madrid and previous ones. There's also a belief at the club that Mourinho has got Real Madrid closer to competing with Barcelona. And don't underestimate the significance of getting to a Champions League semi-final for a club that hasn't got through a single knockout tie in 6 or 7 years. Now, this is where they should be in terms of budget, in terms of the players they've got and stuff like that. But that is a big step in the right direction. Now, there's all sorts of ways you can argue to what extent Mourinho has done a good job or a bad job this year. But Real Madrid are in a position where they can't sack him and they don't want to, but they are uncomfortable with some of the collateral damage.
Sid, one final thing then, very briefly. Today's Gazzetta dello Sport is going big again on Pep Guardiola to the San Siro. Baggio's behind him, Eto's behind him, and they give a whole load of reasons why it could happen. Do you believe?
The first one there is Eto is behind him.
Yeah,
what,
it's interesting.
Wielding a knife? I
mean, no, but he recently renewed his contract, though.
He did, but Pep Guardiola is renewing his contract year on year at Barcelona.
Right.
He's made it very clear on a number of occasions that he doesn't necessarily see being Barcelona coach as a long-term project. This has been an extremely hard year for him, and I was really struck by what he said after the game when he was talking about 19 very, very difficult days. I think he hasn't enjoyed this in the slightest. It's tempting to be kind of won over by the romantic notion of going to Wembley, winning the European Cup, and backing away at the place where it all started for Barcelona, when Guardiola was a player and Barcelona won the 1992 European Cup final at Wembley with that Ronald Koeman goal. And that would create a nice, if you like, a nice sense of closure, a nice sense of fulfilling the circle and then moving on. I think that Guardiola has probably got another season in him, but I don't think it would be very much more than that. So I honestly don't know the answer to whether or not this story is true. There are things in it that don't entirely stand up to me, but plausible, yeah, it's more or less plausible.
All right, nice one. Sid, many thanks for that. Enjoy some well-earned rest, and we'll catch up with you, I hope, on Monday.
Fantastic. See you then.
Well, that's it then for today. Paul McGinnis, thanks so much for taking time out from your celebration of pitch invading, etc., to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
Barry Glendenning, from whatever it was you took time out of.
No, I'm a professional. This is my job. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent news. And Sean Ingall.
Thank you.
Box away. I'm back with a paper review on Friday, and we'll all be back, the whole happy crew, on Monday, looking back on super duper Sunday. So make sure you join us then and have a super weekend in the meantime. Bye then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.